back to the Friends of the Rant podcast and our Carolina Indie Fest artist interview series. Today I've got Asheville, North Carolina's Chris McGinnis and the legendary Paleface and Mo, who are making their fourth Carolina Indie Fest appearance since 2021. Before the interviews start, I'll play Home Away From Home by Chris McGinnis, who plays Carolina Indie Fest at Hugger Mugger Brewing in downtown Sanford at 7:30 p.m. on Friday, May 10th. After the interview, I'll play Mailman's Son.
Oh, to have a home away from home, brand new back porch when mine don't feel like mine home. Every weekend day I'm here means I'm gone, gone to my home away from home. Brand new chunk of land with my home away from home. Oh, to have a home away from home, why should we talk about what I think for alone? If we're gonna scream and shout, we'll do it through the phone. We'll settle down, never more to roam. Just a few more weeks to be the man she's never known. In my home away from home, away from home. Oh, to have a home away from home. In my home away from home, away from home.
Now joined by Asheville-based and Morganton-bred singer-songwriter Chris McGinnis, who is performing at Carolina Indie Fest on May 10th at Hugger Mugger Brewing in downtown Sanford. Chris, I want to kind of give you carte blanche. Just go ahead and tell me your story of how you started playing music, what you play, and why you do it.
Sure. So I play, really my only instrument's guitar. I've been playing since I was about 12 years old. I don't know. I've kind of been interested in songwriting since before I was a musician, and it really kind of just started with, you know, listening to the Beatles and Elvis and just, I don't know, just being moved by music.
I love it.
And, Yeah, I guess, I'm sorry, what was the third part? I think I got the first two.
Just what you do and why you do it.
Oh, sure. I don't know. I think I started it just to keep myself entertained. And that's probably still, I think that's still the answer, honestly.
I think that's the best reason to play music, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
So, I mean, just talk a little bit about like what you consider your music to be. Asking a musician their genre is always kind of like fraught with difficulty because we all listen to all kinds of things. But like, tell me like how you approach your music, what you intend to do, and how you feel like it comes across.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of annoying, right? To, I feel like everybody's like, well, I'm kind of a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, it's frustrating for people who want a straight answer. But I guess, you know, really, I guess you could trace it back to Elvis and the Beatles. I write guitar songs. I like rock, you know, write rock and roll songs.
It's hard to go wrong with that answer, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, for sure. I tell, you know, the short answer is guitar songs. You know, all my songs I write on guitar. So,
yeah,
it's, you know, there's folk and there's rock and there's country and there's, you know, classical and jazz influences, I guess, because I've played both of those. But it all comes through the guitar. So,
yeah. Well, I want to talk a little bit about your music because one of the things that jumped out at me is that like humor is to me, an underappreciated aspect of music. Like it's one thing to be a comedy act, which you are not, but there is stuff that I heard in your songs that made me laugh, you know?
Sure.
And I think what I heard out of it most was almost like, and I mean this in the very best way, but like, it was like a sad cowboy, you know? Like being self-deprecating and telling stories that were a little bit sad, but it had that edge that made you laugh. Is that something that you think about, or is that just something that comes out naturally?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of both, I guess. I won't claim to be like a funny person, but I think it's important to have a sense of humor, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. Like, I feel like the light adds more weight to the dark and vice versa.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's really easy to just get bogged down in trying to be super serious. And right. Then if you don't do a very good job at conveying that, you just look like someone who's trying to be really serious. And that in itself is, you know, the joke is on you at that point, I think.
Yeah.
Humor is just as much of a literary device as anything, and it's just as big of a part of real life as anything. So I think it's important just to have that balance, you know?
Yeah. And like one of your songs, it's called I'm the Mailman's Son.
Yeah.
You know? And like, that's something that's going to like evoke a humorous reaction in anybody. But then the song goes on and you're like, oh damn, like, there's something being said here. And it's just, it felt like an amazing way to like kind of hook somebody in a lighthearted way, but then deliver, you know, what might be a real song.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I guess going on, not my early influences, but certainly huge influences on my writing are Warren Zevon and Randy Newman.
Oh, yeah.
And those guys, they're kind of, I think, the gold standard for balancing, you know, humor and just like terrible gloom.
I love it. Well, like, I guess just back up a little bit and tell me like how long you've been doing this. Like you said, you've been playing since you were not quite a teenager yet, but like, tell me about the history of your music and how long it's been going on and just all that.
Sure. So yeah, I started, you know, again, just writing to entertain myself, you know, in middle school, I guess. And I don't know, all throughout high school, it just like gotten more and more interesting to me. And I just, you know, kept falling down that rabbit hole of discovering new music and wanting to emulate that. And so, yeah, I guess maybe the oldest song I play right now, I wrote probably by a freshman in high school. So I've kind of logged a bunch of miles of just writing songs that I wouldn't really play anymore because, you know, they weren't great. But yeah, I guess, like, I don't know, I've just always been interested in writing. And then at a pretty early age, you know, the melody and the music thing, I figured I could, you know, just mesh those two. And I don't know. I mean, I hope that was an okay answer.
Yeah. But so, I mean, looking at Spotify, which is obviously maybe not always the most accurate measure of how long somebody's been doing things, but you think you have things going back to about 2019, I think it said 2018.
Yeah. I think 2019 was my first release.
Yeah. So, and you have, there's one album available on there and a number of singles. Talk a little bit, I guess, just about how you approach that, doing a song here, a song there, and then a full length album. Like, what was your plan with all that?
Well, really, I mean, the very first single was just recorded as it is, because some friends in college were recording majors and they said, hey, we got to get some project hours in. You know, one of them knew me. I guess I only knew one of them. They're like, hey, if you've got a song to do. And I was like, well, sure, I've got a song. And then I got a recording out of that. So I was like, let's put it out, you know?
Yeah.
Then after that, you know, through meeting, you know, those folks and kind of getting into that part of school, I just realized, you know, I want to keep putting stuff out. I had enough songs for an EP, enough songs that I was, you know, proud enough of to put out. Mm-hmm. So enough for an EP, not enough for a full album. So I went ahead and just did the EP. And, you know, then I guess that kind of just the desire to keep chugging stuff out, you know, really made me a little more disciplined about writing, maybe just writing more regularly and focusing on, you know, being a songwriter as opposed to somebody who just has written a song.
Right. Well, I mean, talk a little bit about how performing live mixed in with that. Like, at what point did that start? Did it come earlier? Did it come later? How did all that work?
I guess really, you know, as a kid, it wasn't until like well into college, I think, that I realized, like, oh, I can, like, book shows. Like, I can send an email to a place and say, hey, here's what I do. Let me perform. So, like, before that, it was always just, like, random opportunities would fall in my lap where, hey, there's, like, a retirement home that's doing, like, a spring fling.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, somebody's grandma goes to and they heard you play guitar. So it was like, you know, maybe I'd have like three shows a year as a kid and it'd all be stuff like that, which was still just incredibly exciting.
Yeah.
And even at, you know, we played all my like not great songs at those gigs. Like the bands that I would have, you know, there'd be like three horrible originals mixed in with a bunch of like, you know, Beatles covers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I guess, I don't know, I kind of got, once I realized, I was having fun doing that. So once I realized, like, after I became more of like a grown person, here's something you could do. Like,
yeah.
And even the worst gig I take today is better than like the retirement home Sunday afternoon thing, you know, like that I did when I was 15. So yeah. Things are just getting better and better when you start really low.
But so you've been doing the live circuit. You know, I looked at your Facebook page and you're doing things in a lot of things in Western North Carolina, Eastern Tennessee. Like how frequent are these shows?
I'm playing just about every weekend. I get maybe two shows a week every year. Most of the time I'm sticking around North Carolina. Pretty much I'll drive across the whole state or whatever. It's,
yeah.
Western North Carolina is the home base, but I'm kind of comfortable playing anywhere in my home state right now. And then just over the past couple of years, I've just been trying to, you know, the goal is to be at least a nationally touring act, you know, just to have fun.
Sure.
So the past few years I've kind of been pushing out, you know, trying to go from just in-state shows to regional shows. So yeah, I've been playing around Tennessee and Georgia and Kentucky and Virginia. And I mean, just the travel aspect of that is fun too. That's another reason.
Yeah.
You know, just to go see places I've never seen and might as well sing some songs while I'm there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your live show, because, you know, recorded, it could go from I'm hearing a full band to I'm hearing a guy with a guitar and everything in between. Like, what is your live show like, and how do you translate those recorded songs into a live performance?
Kind of depends on the gig. I play most of the shows I do right now are solo. Mm-hmm. You know, if I can upgrade from there, I'll add another guitar player or a fiddle player. If I can upgrade from that, I'll throw in a bass player. Ideally, I've got a 4-piece so I can have a drummer. But yeah, kind of, I think it's more about how I write the songs. Like, I write the songs, I guess, you know, it's not entirely intentional, but when I sit down to write a song, I'm thinking like, this has to be, you know, if I'm doing my job, it's entertaining with just my voice, but mm-hmm. you know, my voice and my guitar. So like, if I don't feel confident, like in how it is just me doing it, it doesn't matter how it translates with the band. And so I, you know, sort of the inverse of that, when I do feel good, like this song is great, just me and a guitar, everything else is a bonus, you know?
Yeah.
And like a lot of the arrangements on that album, kind of came, I mean, I had the song done and it was Mailman's Son, I think, is an example where it could have just been by itself, and it wouldn't have suffered really, but the arrangements all come out of like what the song is at its base level, you know?
Yeah.
My friend, way more succinctly than I just said, a good friend of mine told me that, you know, a song should have good bones. And so
yeah.
I try to only write songs with good bones so that like it'll stand up with a 5-piece band or just, you know, humming it to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Like that's something I think a lot of musicians over the years have struggled with, you know, like what do I write and how do I write it? And yeah, a song that you can play on an acoustic guitar or with a 5-piece band or with a 7-piece band or whatever iteration it might be is going to be the type of song that's more timeless than not. But, sure. Speaking specifically about Carolina Indie Fest, one, I'm curious about how you got involved with it, but what is your setup going to be for Indie Fest?
Yeah. So I'll have the 4-piece with me. And that'll actually be, it'll be my cell phone guitar, a good buddy of mine, Chandler Bell, an upright bass. Well, they're all good buddies. Chandler Bell, an upright bass. Owen Myers is going to be playing a second guitar. Mm-hmm. And I'll have my buddy Joel Nelson on fiddle. So it's going to be almost like a string band arrangement, sort of like an electric string band kind of.
I love it.
Which, again, I think is, you know, I wouldn't think of myself as a bluegrass artist. And bluegrass doesn't have like a huge influence on my sound, but I love a string band arrangement, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. And it's going to be awesome to hear because, you know, yours is a style of music where the live performance can be interpreted in many different ways. So I'm excited. Like I told you earlier, I enjoyed listening to the album. I'm looking forward to seeing how that is interpreted.
Yeah.
In a live setting.
Yeah, thanks. It's fun. I think I've got videos actually of that same arrangement on my YouTube, so it shouldn't.
Okay.
I don't know. I hope I'm not tricking anybody. That is something I'm ran into, where you know people listen to my music and then it doesn't sound exactly like it does on the record, and it doesn't sit well with everybody.
But, well, to me, that's a boring music fan. You know, like somebody who hears you know, a recording and wants to see the same thing exactly the same way in a live setting, you know, you should go experience the live performance, experience the recording and enjoy both of them for what they are.
Right. Man, I'm a big Bob Dylan fan.
Yeah.
I've seen him live like 7 times now, maybe. But I've seen him 3 times on like this most recent tour he's been doing, the Rough and Rowdy Ways tour. And essentially, except for a couple like changes, it's been the same set list, but he's played like most of those songs differently all 3 times that I've seen him in the span of like 1.5 years now. And that's that. Like fascinating to me, you know.
It's mind blowing, you know, because as somebody who plays music in my own way, like you practice and practice and practice. Well, not you. I practice and practice and practice and practice to do things right. And to be able to go off script like that is it's mind blowing, and it's scary, you know, to even think about doing that. So to be able to interpret your own songs in multiple ways it's really impressive to me.
Well, thanks. He's the king of that. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He who is not busy being born is busy dying.
There you go. Well, talk a little bit about how you became involved in IndieFest, how it ended up on your radar, how you ended up being booked for it, and just anything related to that.
Yeah, so I don't really remember how it's been on my radar for like a few years, just, you know, because a big goal of mine, I've not done a ton of festivals, so like a big goal of mine has been to just play more festivals, and that's, you know, one of the like more popular like North Carolina festivals going on. So just looking up like, hey, what's going on around me?
Yeah.
Carolina Indie Fest came up. So I just sent in my EPK this year and got in contact, and they got, you know, they liked what they saw well enough, I guess, and got back to me.
I love it.
It is really cool that they're uniquely like pushing like original music. You know?
Yeah.
And they're like, they're not afraid of that. That's what they're doing, you know? So much like, I don't know. It's hard. I feel like it's really hard these days to find people who want to hear new stuff, you know? And like, it's a hard place for a songwriter, I think, within, I don't know, the music scene. Just cause there's so many songs.
Like, yeah.
So yeah. I really appreciate the festival for, you know, the mission they have there.
Yeah, that's one of the coolest aspects of it is that they ask for an hour of original music. And on top of that, the genres are all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's just so cool. It's almost like there's something for everybody. And even if one thing isn't your favorite, like you might learn something new about music just from going. Yeah. And people are really responding to that.
Yeah, that's so cool. Like, cause I went to college. I finished college at App State, and that's sort of where I, you know, think of the transition happening from being someone who writes songs to becoming a songwriter. Just that's where I really started to get serious about it. And you could, you know, Boone was so cool because there's so many people crammed into like this small space.
Yeah.
You know, it almost felt like a weird little Lego set, you know, here's like, you know, here's the school and here's where everybody goes to play shows. And, you know, it's just this little microcosm of all these different personalities. So you could go to like a burrito shop on a Tuesday night and you'd see like a metal band and a country band and a jazz fusion band, like all on the same bill. And like they all had the same bass player. You know,
yeah, I love that.
It's really hard, whatever size venue, you know, wherever you are, it's very rare to see like a bill that diverse,
yeah.
You know? So like, yeah, the fact that like IndieFest has like all sorts of music, like in this, like, you know, sort of 2-day window is, I love it, right up my alley.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always a lot of fun. And I say this to everybody, and I don't say it because I just say it to everybody, but everybody that Tim books always impresses me, and I'm always excited to kind of hear, you know, the performance that you bring, because I think it's going to go over really well, because there's just so much weird stuff, not weird stuff, but weird combinations of stuff that, sure. That I think are going to be awesome. So I always like to close these interviews by just giving you an opportunity to tell people where they can find your music, where they can find information about you. I know that the internet is full of sites for that now, but if there's a place that you prefer people to find that information, please take the opportunity to share that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess I send everybody to Spotify, but I'm also on Apple Music, all the big streamers, you know, yeah. Just Chris McGinnis. Really, if you, you know, I've got a website, chrismcginnismusic.com. You okay. Go there, it'll take you to a link to sign up for my email list. And that's the best way to keep up with like where I'm going to be and what I'm doing. I'm starting to record my next album this summer. So I'm just playing a ton more shows to support that. And all that will be in my email list. So really, I guess my website, chrismcginnismusic.com.
I'm the mailman's son. I'm the only one. Of my brothers three, who my mama's ashamed to see. 'Cause my daddy don't look like me. I'm the mailman's son. Cold snow and rain. Brought my mama pain. Heat and gloom found their way into my daddy's bedroom. Swift completion done a little too soon made the mailman's son.
Mailman's Son by Chris McGinnis, who plays Carolina Indie Fest at Hugger Mugger Brewing in downtown Sanford at 7:30 p.m. on Friday, May 10th. Next up is our interview with Paleface and Moe, who make their fourth Indie Fest appearance at 8 p.m. on Saturday, May 11th. Before the interview starts, here's Paleface's new single, If I Could Make You Smile. After the interview, I'll play Most of My Worries Never Happen.
If I could give you the world that you want, I would do it. You deserve it. After all you've given me, everything, the love that you showed me, the heart you opened. If I can make you smile, I'll make you smile. get a thing. Give it something, put style to it, try to make it a thing. I know if I make this thing, then I could make you, make you smile. If I
joined for the fourth time by IndieFest performers Paleface and Mo. Welcome back to the podcast, guys. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having us. Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Be here. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. It's always an exciting event, and this is the fourth time you guys have done it. Let's talk about that a little bit. What is it about this event that keeps you coming back?
Well, we were apparently the first band to ever play at Hogger Mogger Brewing.
Mm-hmm.
Some places just feel like home, you know. Just like you know people, you know. It's just kind of, you look forward to playing those shows.
Yeah, we should have a good connection there.
Absolutely. So when I emailed to get in touch about this podcast, you mentioned that you were working on editing a video for your newest single, If I Could Make You Smile. The last time we talked, you had a new album kind of in the can but not quite ready to come out. That's been out for a year now. Talk about what's been going on since then. Obviously there's a new single. Talk a little bit about that.
That was, just a one-off because people kept telling me that I couldn't just make records and disappear for 2 years. You know, you had to like keep, so it was like the old, you know, Rolling Stones and Beatles and all those bands who had singles constantly and then would make a record. So I was like, okay, you know, that's not like it's a new thing, but it's also a very old thing. So whatever, I can do that. And that kind of was the first song. I just had these chords and made up a song, and it turned out good enough to release, I guess. I got Mo's okay. And
I can't remember if we did an interview after we had released Beyond the Bells, our new album.
Oh, I don't remember.
Or not.
I'm not sure. I don't think we talked about it, but I
could
be
wrong.
Because
we can talk about that too. Okay. The album.
But well, yeah, yeah, I mean, I like that record a lot. And I know you were real excited because the people you were working with had, you know, some storied recording careers, but talk about what the reaction was like to the record and how it's been getting to play those songs.
Well, you know, like we're so lo-fi indie, you know, we don't measure it by that, but when we play the songs live, people are almost surprised. They're like, wow, I love these new songs. So, you know, that's kind of what we go by. In that way, it seems to be a success. People are really enjoying those songs. And we're enjoying playing them. It's kind of like a new phase for me. I told somebody in an interview the other day that I'm not really recording a band. I'm making something, you know, because I don't, it's not like I could do demos like, you know, like Pete Townsend would do demos of his songs and then bring them to the band. And then they would, you know, if they could beat the bass line or the drum beat or whatever, you know, like Keith Moon would put his thing on it and Entwistle would do whatever, you know, and then the singer. So I can't really do that. I don't have those quality musicians to do that with. So I'm just making something. It's all just me and Mo. You know, I say, Mo, can you give me that drum beat that I heard the other day in rehearsal, you know, and I'll just loop it and see if I can make a song out of it, or I have a beat in mind. It pretty much starts with one idea and then I try to build on it. You know, either it's a guitar, and then I put a beat on it to see if it'll work, or the other way around, I have a beat and put some chords on it. But it's really, I'm just making something. It's more like a digital sculpture.
Yeah.
To me.
That's cool. Like everything falls to the two of y'all. So
pretty much.
You're right. It's not demoing so much as, I like that phrase, digital sculpture.
Yeah. And the weird thing about it is it's made me so much more focused and attentive to everything. So I feel like somehow the art is getting better because it's not just going into a studio and playing some songs and hoping you get a good take, you know, I'm responsible for everything. I'm looking at everything very carefully. And the more I do it, like I'm right now making yet another record, deep into it right now. So it's like, yeah, if I work a little harder on these beats, they're going to flow better. They're going to, you know, so it's all learning and getting better, which is exciting for me as an artist.
Absolutely. And after, you know, 30 plus years of doing it, to find yourself in a position where you're still learning new things about yourself and the way you produce art, that's got to be a cool feeling.
Well, it's just made me a better artist, you know, and it's kind of like, I looked around and a lot of the people that I liked were doing the same thing, you know, whether it was Kevin Parker or the Black Keys or the Washed Out guy, you know, they're all kind of making they're kind of doing it themselves, you know, maybe in a bigger way, but still it's, you know, Kevin Parker does everything himself. He records the whole album. So,
wow.
You know, that's,
inspiring. I'll have to look for him. I'm not familiar with him, but
he's the head of Tame Impala. His moniker is Tame Impala.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But I've been a fan of his for a long time. His new stuff is more poppy, but I like sort of the psychedelic guitar stuff more.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you referenced that you're already working on a new record.
Yeah, I'm deep into it. I got 10 songs and I'm like, I spent the last month like every day working on it. So
what are the plans for that?
I don't
know. Well, we'll see. We'll get it ready. It looks like I'm going to have to mix it the way things are. So that's another thing. We'll see. I don't know. You know, it's too early.
Yeah, it's too early to know when we're going to release it.
We just released the single, so we're kind of in that.
I think what we might do for the next album release is PF was talking about maybe releasing like a single first or maybe two singles first and then releasing the whole album. So mm-hmm. we'll release the singles before the album.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Yeah, okay. We'll do that. I mean, that's standard now for everybody, I think, you know. Put out a couple songs.
Build a little anticipation.
Yeah, like the Black Keys even did. I think the Avits are doing it now, but it's also like, I think the record company, it's kind of another thing for them, you know, if you have one, for them to see, you know, what they're going to, if it's working or not, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, what's your headspace like for, you know, having you finished an album last year and got it out. Do you immediately look to what's the next record? I mean, obviously the single was in there, but you said that was kind of somebody asked you to do that. Did you finish that album, get it out, and immediately start thinking about the next one? Or do you have to get to a certain point before you know you're ready?
It's a little more of that. It's more like a wind up, you know, because I already had some ideas. So it's in your head already, and you're formulating and gathering beats and little things here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really until you sit down and really get to work do you see what actually works. I mean, you can fantasize in your mind what's good and what's not.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like once you get it down, like that's when you see for real what actually works. So I'm really in that phase right now.
Okay. So, I mean, you said you've got 10 songs. Is the plan to make it a 10 song album, or are you just at the point in the process where you have 10 songs and there may be more to come?
I've got a lot more, but 10 seems to be like, you know, cause you could just keep working forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got so many songs. It's like, I had to really narrow it down. I might have had like 13 and I narrowed it to 10 that were working the best. So, but you know, you can go and go and go.
Well, that's something that always interests me is when you talk to musicians and they talk about the album process. I think it was years ago. I read about like a Green Day album where it was 10, 12, 14 songs, whatever, but they said they'd gone in with like 40 songs, you know? And
Wow. I can't do that anymore. I'm not even going to attempt that. 15 is good, you know?
Yeah. But I'm always curious. Yeah, for real. But like, I'm always curious about, you know, those songs that don't make the cut. And I'm sure it's different for every artist, but are those things that get completely abandoned? Or are they things that you come back to and maybe try to look at it in a different way, or things that you like as they are, but they just don't fit with this record? How does that work?
There's some of those, all of the above. There's a song that I have that is really good that I like, but I just can't see it on the record, or I haven't been able to make it work in a band setting. So maybe I'll just record it with an acoustic guitar and
single.
That'll just be whatever it is, you know, or maybe I'll figure out how to make it into something more than that. But yeah, I wonder about that too. You know, my old manager, Danny Fields, used to yell at me all the time because in my 20s, I had so many songs, and he would scream at me that he heard like the best song I ever wrote, but he only heard it once and then it was gone, you know, because I was writing so many songs. But it is like, there's only so much you can do, I think. It's just, you know,
right.
You can only work as fast as you can work, you know. I don't know.
And at the end of the process, I mean, it's your art, it's your name and face on it, and you get to be the final, you know, arbiter of whether that goes out in the world or not.
That's true, but that's not always good. I was just listening to a podcast with the Black Keys this morning, and they were talking about Tighten Up, and Tighten Up was their first breakout single that got them, you know, noticed, and they thought it was garbage and didn't want to put it on their record. And they played it for a friend, and their friend was like, "You guys are tripping. This is a hit song. You better put this on the record." Yeah. So they had somebody like that too, like that they respected enough, you know.
Right.
And it, of course, it was a big hit, and it put them in a whole nother category.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to have, I guess, confidence in yourself to know what it is you want out of your art, but also the ability to listen when people are pushing you in a certain direction. So there's, I'm sure there's got to be a balance there.
But yeah, I mean, yep.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, the history of pop music is just littered with, we need one more song, and they came up with a song in 10 minutes, and that became the hit.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like a constant.
I was at a show a couple months ago, and approached one of the bands that was on tour from somewhere, and I said, you know, I really loved X song. I think it was the third or fourth one you played. It started out with this drum beat, and all of them were like, oh, yeah, that one. That's, like, that's our least favorite. You always, you know, you go to compliment somebody and that's the one they don't like, but it's funny how different things hit different people in different ways.
Musicians are, it's like in life, you know, it's easy to look at someone else and see their flaws or their strengths, but it's harder to look at yourself and see those things.
Yeah, absolutely. So what has, you guys, it seems like I'm always seeing on social media that you guys are playing somewhere. The last time you were here was September of last year. But no, I believe it was May of last year.
Yeah, it was May of last year.
Yes. Yep. So what's the last year been like for you guys as far as performing? Have you been all over the place? I know you do a lot in North Carolina, but have you been elsewhere?
We've done some, and then we had to take a break. We had some injuries. We took a break.
Ooh. Yeah, we went, and then after that, we went to Florida, and then
when we played in Florida, yeah.
And so then we did a little bit of the Northeast, but mostly we've stayed in the Southeast this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yep. Guys, is there anything you know that I haven't asked you about? You know, always, you've done it before, but I always like to give people, you know, the opportunity to share where folks can find their music, where you like for folks to find your music and information about y'all.
Okay, sure. You can find music, videos, and all that on our website. It's palephaseonline.com. And we're about to release a new video for that single we were talking about, which is called If I Could Make You Smile. And
when does that video come out?
That's a good question. I think it's going to come out this weekend. So okay. It should be out, you know, this weekend.
Freak.